Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free, easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today. Save big money
at Menards. Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the Squirrel Cage Jail Museum with Kat Slaughter. In the 1880s, the Squirrel Cage Jail in Council Bluffs, Iowa, was considered a revolutionary concept in housing inmates. They claimed the new concept allowed for maximum security with minimum jailer attention. It was a 19th century marvel, constructed so that only one jailer was needed to keep an eye on an entire jail full of prisoners. The cells were all positioned on a central carousel that when a hand crank was turned, it would rotate the cells so that only one could be entered at a time. However, it didn't take long to realize this concept didn't work as they thought it would. While the jailer could attend to that one cell, the others were simply trapped. Of the 18 prisons built, most were closed within a couple of years after opening. However, the Squirrel Cage Jail remained in operation until 1969. But it seems some of those who were once there are still there. Reports of hauntings date back to the 1950s, when a jailer refused to sleep in his quarters because he believed it to be haunted. Today on The Grave Talks, we talk about the hauntings of the Squirrel Cage Jail with Kat Slaughter, director of the Squirrel Cage Jail Museum and Rails West Railroad Museum. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in both of these locations. The one that drew me to you, though, was the Squirrel Cage Jail Museum. And I saw that first, and I was like, what the heck is this? Because it says it's a jail, but then when you look at photos of it, I would seriously say an old courthouse is what it looks like. Does not it's look a like
weird
a jail.
One.
Yeah, it's a really weird one. So I want to start a little with you. So you're the director there. When you started working there, maybe just by looking at the building, did you have a feeling there might be more going on than just directing the museum?
I'd been told about it little bit when I started.
So you had a little knowledge of paranormal.
Yeah, I've been there about 7 years now, so I've also had a lot of time to explore the building. And some days you just know you're not the only one in there, even if you have the front door locked.
Did you have any experience with the paranormal before you took the job, or were you kind of a skeptic? Where did you fall on that?
Oh, I watched the shows growing up, I believed in it, but I hadn't really had any experiences, and I was okay with that.
Until, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Working there, I think it's not impossible, but hard to remain a skeptic. When you hear doors slam, music start playing, things like that, there's very few ways to explain that away when you're the only one there.
Yes. And you've been there 7 years, though. So obviously for you, it's not something that's terrifying, or you've kind of gotten used to it, maybe.
It's kind of my normal. We like to joke it's our weird coworker.
That would be a weird coworker, yes. Let's go back into the history of the Squirrel Cage Museum. The first question has to be, how the heck did it get its name, Squirrel Cage?
So if you've ever seen a squirrel cage motor or a squirrel cage fan, it works in the same way. I just believe they were more popular when it got its nickname. But if you think of a three-layer carousel with a fence around it, that's basically what it is, with one opening per floor.
So this was built in 1885. And
yes.
I saw the name of the guy who thought this would be a great, William H. Brown and Benjamin F. Hoff. They decide this is a new revolutionary way to house inmates. It would cut down on the cost of help. You don't need as many jailers. And it's just this brilliant design idea in 1885. And in theory, it was a brilliant idea. Tell yes. us a little about this design and how it works.
So you're completely right. The idea is to cut down on staff, and financially, it's meant to be better. Ours was $30,000 to construct back in 1885, and it took about 5 months. They started construction in April, and we were able to be open for business by about the second week of September. Ours also has housing for the jailer and his family on the top floor. So we have three levels of cells with that top level for the jailer and his family to live. So you're always on staff.
So there's somebody there at all times, which is also a really good idea. But it's interesting because the way it's designed, you can't help anyone quickly there.
No, you can't. The fire marshal had problems with that by the time we hit 1960.
Big problems. When you think of a jail, you think of hallways with jail cells lined up one after another. Maybe there's multiple floors, but this wasn't like that. So it was kind of a carousel that turned. So the jailer stayed in the central part of the building or floor,
so
I should say.
It would actually be more of an added entry point.
Okay.
If you think it's like that record player, I guess, and you're standing outside of the record player is the jailer.
Oh, okay.
And then the record, if you'll go with my thing there, is the jail cells moving. So you'd rotate that entire cage and you'd have one opening per floor. And so you'd have to rotate everybody around to get an inmate in or out.
So the idea being you as one jailer, maybe there'd be two, I don't know. But a couple jailers could handle all these prisoners because they are so locked in, they cannot escape. And they literally cannot escape.
That's the theory, anyhow. We had quite a few escapes over the years. And we ended up getting a second jailer, a relief jailer, that did assist during quite a few years there. We had at least 24 staff members in 84 years, and that's only talking about the jailers and relief jailers.
24?
Yeah.
So, oh,
and each
oh my God.
Main jailer had a wife that worked there as well.
Well, of course, because she was the wife and she had to. She had no choice.
Yes.
You're going to work here.
You had to
and you're not
have a
paid.
Wife if you were going to work there.
So the idea being, say, how many jail cells would be in one of these records, let's call it?
In ours, we have 10 cells per floor and 30 cells in total in our rotary portion of the jail. And that houses 60 inmates. And so each cell is kind of like a slice of pie. And you'd have two people in there and it gets smaller towards the back of the cell. It'd be two men. And in our jail at that time, it was considered 14 years of age and up.
And once they're in this cell and they're kind of rotated off, they're dealing with somebody else now. So it's like a big mechanism that moves the cells around. Could they see out? Once you're rotated out, could you even see outside, or is it just like a cement enclosure?
So you'd be able to see out into what we call the day room. You have bars going over it, but those are going to be closer to your stereotypical cell bars. You just don't have a door.
It's just so fascinating to me because in theory, sounds great, but like this mechanism was really loud and really probably, you know, built in 1880s. It was probably even hard to maneuver it, I would think.
In the beginning, it was supposed to be very easy. They say a child could have rotated it. As time goes on, the entire cage gets out of alignment, and the base of the cage is a giant gear that connects to a smaller gear with hand cranks. And once that goes out of alignment, it becomes very difficult to rotate, getting stuck on occasion.
Once they're stuck, you can't get to them.
No, you cannot. They would just be completely stuck in the cells, which is why the fire marshal was not impressed and made a stop rotation in 1960.
And when you say we, you don't mean like you were there. But
oh, no, I feel so connected.
So if they're stuck, say the gears kind of jam up and you got to bring someone in who knows how to work on this, how were they able to get food and water to the prisoners?
We're not sure. I know you could hand it around to all of the first floor and a portion of the second, but it would be quite difficult to get it to the back of the third floor cells because it's completely open. There's no physical way to access that except for climbing up the cell bars.
Oh, wow.
So if you are a third floor inmate on the back, you get to just look down about three stories to a concrete floor.
And there was injuries, too, that occurred with this, as one might think.
Yes. So some inmates did get their arms damaged, sometimes on purpose, sometimes on accident when it would move. I know sometimes they would do it on purpose because it was harder to escape in the building than it would be on the way to the hospital.
So instead they get to go to a hospital room now. And that would be a pretty extreme injury.
Yes, it would be a blunt force trauma injury for sure. It would likely stop the mechanism from moving, but you're going to be fully crushing the bones in your arm.
You know, when you think about this, it really sounds like this torture chamber jail sort of place.
Yeah, it's not a great place. Our solitary confinement would be more than illegal these days. It's less than 2 feet by 2 feet by 6 feet tall.
Wait, it's 2 feet by 2 feet and six. You can't even lay down in that.
Most people can't sit down, and most men, just the width of their shoulders, they can't turn around in there.
Oh, it's 2 feet wide.
Yeah, and that's being generous on the measurement there.
So they didn't even have, you're right, 2 feet. How would you sit down?
Some people can a little bit, but most just can't sit in there. So you'd have to stand the entire time, whether that's a few hours to our longest, which was 10 days.
Oh my God. So yeah, as we talk, it just becomes more clear to me why this place is haunted to this day.
With some strong emotions in this building.
And even then it just sounds so outrageous. And I don't even have all the words for that. Because you can't, I would even think breathing in there, you know, just a panic attack. It's so small.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't.
It gets stuffy. You can see out bars on one side. The other is just a solid metal door. And then it's solid metal on the other two sides of you. So it's really uncomfortable in there.
Understatement. You know, when they originally designed this building, the architects designed, they built 18 different areas, not there in Council Bluffs, but in different areas. And most of them closed relatively soon. Is that correct?
Yes, they did. Ours was, I believe, the fourth one built, and around the time they were getting it patented. So ours is slightly different than some of the earlier ones. Not necessarily in a good way, but you could see they were still trying some stuff out. The first one constructed was in Crawfordsville, Indiana in 1881. And theirs is a two-story that I believe still rotates today. So definitely something to check out. They're a museum as well.
And there's only three of them that you can still see?
Yes. So the other one is in Gallatin, Missouri, and that's a one story. So we're very lucky. We have a one, two, and three.
Oh, that's
interesting. And ours is the largest ever built.
So when the other ones, did they close relatively soon after opening? Did people realize this isn't a good way to house our prisoners? It doesn't work the way we thought it would?
Yes, many of them closed pretty quickly. And either they reused parts of the building or they tear it down completely. I believe ours was called disgusting and unfit by maybe the first time in 1903. And that's not long after we were built.
Because that was just 1885.
Yes.
But it continued in use until, was it 1969?
Yes, it was used until December of 1969.
Why was it that it continued in operation for so long? Was it that people didn't want to cough up the money to pay for a new jail? Did they think this is good
exactly
enough?
That.
They're bad people. Uh-huh.
It's always money. It's always going to be the answer.
And they've already done bad things. This is what they deserve.
I think that was a lot of it. And then when it would go up for a bond issue, people knew a new one was needed, but they just didn't want to put that financial, choice into it. And they wanted to put it other places. Finally, Sheriff Weichel actually cleared out the jail and had tours come through so you could see how bad it was for the inmates as well as the staff there. Because by 1960, it was getting too dangerous to rotate. So the fire marshal orders it to stop rotation. And now we have cells that don't have any doors. So the cells are cut into all the way around on the first floor and on the second and third on the front half where we have platforms. But there's no way to lock inmates in their cells now. It's a complete free-for-all for those next 9 years. So it just became very dangerous for everybody in that building.
Oh, that's almost as bad as what it was.
Yeah, I don't know if it's safer or not.
I wouldn't think so, because now you've got a lot of bad people who might not even like each other. They certainly don't care for the jailers.
So we have had jailers jumped in the building before and attacked. Luckily, nothing too violent with the jailers overall, but definitely a dangerous position to be in. I mean, it's just you and your wife and an additional backup jailer at times. They're not even going to be in there the entirety of the time.
So they didn't even bring in extra help when they're like, okay, we're going to open these doors. Y'all stay here.
Staff.
Oh, wow. So finally, in 1969, they closed it down for good and they moved them into a proper jail.
Yes, they had to build one. So they were housed in different areas in Pottawatomie County until a new jail was constructed.
Now, there were some bad people who stayed in this jail. I was reading about one of the guys, a serial killer, sounds like in the 1940s, maybe 30s to 40s, Jake Bird.
Oh, sure.
Tell a little about him.
He was housed with us in 1928. And that was after an attempted murder in the Carter Lake area, which is really close to us. He was housed at our jail and a couple other jails, so there was concern that he might not live to trial. He is found guilty of the attempted murders, and he's sent to Fort Madison, and that's on the other side of the state. And he's supposed to stay there for 30 years, but he gets out after about 12 due to good behavior. Gets a job on the railroads. He can move across the country pretty easily. But he's picked up in Washington State in 1947. And he is convicted of a murder of two women, a mother and daughter. And he was easily connected to the case because brain matter is still on his person at the time of arrest.
Oh, my God.
So he's very easily connected. He was found guilty. He's sentenced to execution, where he admits to 44 additional axe slayings. So he connects himself to 46. Courts can connect to about 10 or so just because of the time period, but he is a prime suspect in numerous others. And if that's not creepy enough, he tells everyone involved with his punishment that they will die before his execution. and 6 die in that coming time, 5 heart attacks and a case of bronchitis, and that becomes known as the Jake Bird Hex. And then he is executed in 1949 in Walla Walla, Washington.
That is so creepy.
That yeah, he's a very creepy guy.
Basically cursed them and it happened.
Yeah, like, you know, it has to be the biggest coincidence, but it's one creepy one. That's for sure.
I could say, you know, even if I'm going to curse you, you're going to die before I die. And then one guy dies. I'd be like, ooh, but 6 yeah. seems like more than a coincidence. 6 feels like
and 5
a curse.
Heart attacks.
Yes.
Like, I don't know.
And he's such a bad person. So how long did he stay there in the squirrel cage jail?
We don't know exactly, just because he was moved around to other locations for trial. As a county jail, most of the time we're going to have your misdemeanors and just people drying out, things like that. If you're in there for a felony level, you're going to be awaiting trial and going through your sentencing process. And then they're going to be transferred out.
And then I was reading too that a prisoner actually died in the jail, and because it was so hard to get to anyone, because it wasn't just like, go unlock the cell. It took like 2 days.
I can't find any evidence of that one occurring. We do know of 5 deaths on record, but as far as we know, no bodies were stuck in there for an extended period of time.
Okay. That makes me feel slightly better.
Yeah. Still not good, but I haven't been able to find any concrete evidence on that one.
The reports of hauntings go back to like the 1950s. So this isn't just a recent sort of phenomena. In the 50s, there was a jailer who refused to stay on the...
So we've heard that he refused to stay up there. That goes back and forth a little bit, but I have spoken to some of the family that he definitely believed the building was haunted and had heard footsteps throughout.
And I mean, he spent a lot of time there.
Oh, definitely.
And you know, that's one that's not so long ago. He would still have living relatives, I would think.
Yes.
You know, he could be alive still.
Grandchildren come mm-hmm. through. He's passed away, unfortunately. He wasn't the youngest man when he was working there. His grandchildren have agreed that he believed it was haunted. And then one of our volunteers found out by volunteering with us that she's actually related to Jailer Foster.
So what do you know about paranormal activity in the building? So when you started there, maybe you're like, could be, but I don't really believe in that sort of thing. How long before you were kind of thinking maybe there was more to it?
Oh, not long. I believe it was our first week. Myself and someone else, we started around the same time. We were closing up for the day. And so we were doing paperwork in the office, which is on the first floor near the door. It's the old booking room. And we heard music coming from the fourth floor. And it's an old 1800s music box that you would have to wind with a key. And we were the only ones in the building, and we don't mess with the 1800s music box.
You have one
pretty
there
in your face
in the museum?
Yes, we keep it on the fourth floor, and it just started playing on its own.
Oh, well, that shouldn't happen.
No. And since it's all brass and gears, you know, it's not like an electric failure or something like that causing it to play.
And you would know exactly what you're hearing.
Oh,
because
yes.
You've heard it before.
No, we were very certain what it was. And we had not closed down the upper floors. So we definitely went together.
Because now it's open as a museum. It's a Sheriffs and Deputies Association Museum.
So we're actually run by the Historical Society of Pottawatomie County.
Okay.
And they've been running the museum since the 70s. But we are the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association West Museum.
Okay.
We joined a partnership with them a few years ago. So we have a special display on one of our floors all about that association.
So it's not the entire building. So you really do go in for a historical tour, like during the daytime hours?
Yes.
And can you see like the apparatus that's supposed to turn, or is that all encased and you can't see that?
You can see portions of it. But in 1960, when they stopped rotation, And since they used it for another 9 years, portions were just dismantled. So you can see into the old gear shaft and some of the gears are remaining, but the chains were removed.
Okay.
But we do still have a few portions of chain that you can see. They're just not attached. And we have one of the hand cranks that would have been used to rotate all 90,000 pounds.
Because it seems like to me that would be massive.
It's smaller than you expect.
Really?
The base of the cage, they made it as one gear. And so that connects to a smaller gear that is at the front entryway, or entry cab is what we usually call it, into the main cell block. And underneath there, there's a chain that would go into the gear shaft. And that has multiple gears in it that are connected by chains and moved with a hand crank. It's a lot easier if you see that visually. It's very hard to describe.
I want to come look. I think it would be fascinating. And I'm not too far away, because you're up by Omaha.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm in Wichita, so we're about 5-hour drive. And when you drive in the Midwest, 5 hours is nothing.
That's a day trip.
Right? We don't think anything about it. Oh, it's just 5 hours. As going back to the hauntings, so you have had, you know, of some confirmed deaths in the building. Do they think those people haunt it? Or is there even some theories as to what's going on in the building?
It seems to be probably a mixture. From the teams I've had through over the years, it seems like maybe 7 to 9 different entities running through the building, some intelligent and some residual. Definitely have footsteps. I've heard those personally, and that's always a weird thing. Turn around and there's nobody there when you heard somebody walk behind you. We've had male voices, female voices, and children's voices as well. And then my personal favorite, we've had meowing caught on EVPs.
So cats in the building too.
Yes, which I just love.
So what are some of the interesting things that have happened? Let's start with employees and then we'll kind of talk about investigations, things that you found out. But have you heard, are there some stories that kind of passed from employee to employee? Like, oh, that one time Nancy was working, you know, those types of stories?
A little bit, but not too much, just because we've always had a small staff, I think.
Okay.
We must be immolating or just trying to follow the original steps. There's two of us that work there currently now, and we've been the two there for 7 years. So most of the stories right now are ours. But many staff and volunteers who have been there have heard bangs. They've heard footsteps. That's just a really popular one in there. We've heard doors slam, doors open. You'll come in the morning and find lights on, and you know you were the last one in. You're the first one there the next morning. Some of our security cameras have had issues. They'll just turn on for no motion in a room, or our motion sensors will also just turn on with nobody in the room, which is always exciting when you're home at 2 a.m. and you get a nice notification that your alarms are going off.
And then you look at it and
just nothing there, which is what you want.
Yes,
but
that's
it's always
true.
A little like, okay, good to know.
But it was triggered by something.
Yeah, we've seen doors open actually on one of our security cameras as well. We were able to catch what a team had seen with their eyes on our camera, which was exciting.
And how long have the paranormal teams been investigating there? Quite a while?
Yeah, I believe a decade at least.
Okay. Are you finding some similarities in what they're reporting?
Yes, we do. They also tend to get a lot of footsteps. They get more voices. But they're also sitting down trying to get the voices, whereas museum staff were trying to get paperwork
done. Yeah, you're doing actual
stuff done. Yeah, whereas they're trying to find stuff, and they, it seems like, make contact fairly often. It's always difficult with that one because they have to go through so many recordings and sit down and do that. I don't know how they have the patience.
Oh, you know, because if you roll for 8 hours and you might have more than one recorder going, you have to listen to every second of that.
Yes.
And even go back. What was that? You know, oh, that was the normal creaking sound of the building. Because there are normal sounds that go with a building.
Oh, definitely.
Doesn't explain footsteps. That's a different, you know, footsteps are footsteps.
They're very obvious. Mm-hmm. That one always sticks with me. That was probably one of my second solid experiences there, was hearing footsteps going up the stairs behind me and turning around and being completely alone.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Squirrel Cage Jail Museum with museum director Kat Slaughter. In part two of our conversation, we'll talk more about the Squirrel Cage Jail Museum, as well as hauntings at the Rails West Railroad Museum. Get more information about the jail, tours, and even paranormal investigations at thehistoricalsociety.org. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there all ad free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thanks so much for listening.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.